variety, culture, and class in America. Live from Long Island's Gold Coast, this is the Melissa Itell Duran Show on Breaking It Down Radio with co-host Frank McKay.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the Melissa Itell Duran Show. Frank McKay here. Much more importantly, the host each and every week and Renaissance woman, Melissa Itell Duran. Hey, Melissa, how are you?
I'm doing great, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well, and we just got news, right, that Prince Philip has passed away, and
yes.
I was hoping he'd get to his 100th birthday, but it didn't happen. He died just shy of that.
Yeah, but still, 99 is a long life, very long life, and the Queen, Buckingham Palace issued a statement saying that the Queen was, was mourning the passing of her beloved husband of 73 years, I believe.
Wow. How about that? I thought you were going to say that the Queen was putting out a statement that that she will be dating soon.
But, well, had she been maybe 20 years younger,
right,
perhaps.
She would be she would be the bachelorette, the most, bachelor, whatever. But right now, yeah. How close were they? Do we know anything about their lives?
Well, they got married when she was very young. I mean, he was only, he's 4 or 5 years, 5 years older than she, and they met, they actually met when she was an adolescent, and she really was smitten with him, and that was when she was only Princess Elizabeth, and his uncle, Lord Mountbatten, who was very close to him, and died in that Northern Ireland bombing on his boat.
Yeah.
He was killed while he was sailing with his grandson and some other passengers. He was the one who nudged Philip to court her and marry her. He felt it would be a very good marriage for many reasons. And of course, once she became the heir to the throne, his life changed. He had to give up his career in the Navy, and had he pursued that, he would have probably reached the top of the top ranks. And he had to spend the rest of his life walking several steps behind her. And I guess it was a blow to his ego, as he was always known as, he was the prince consort. He did lobby to get the title His Royal Highness, Prince of Duke of Edinburgh. He got that much certification. That I guess for many men that might have been a come down. You know, imagine you have to walk behind your wife.
Oh my God!
She's the head of the family, but in private he actually. He was the one who wore the pants. I mean, he acted like a husband with her in private.
Yeah.
Because life is no different. Even if they have 500 million servants, he's still the husband. If he doesn't like what something's going on, he says something. But in public, he had to play this role. And he used to say, he used to say these self-deprecating things. No, I'm just an amoeba. I'm just there to please the customer. It's nothing else. There's nothing in it for me. I don't know. I mean, I've heard, and I've, of course we've all heard rumors of their rocky points in their marriage, where he was suspected of having flirtations and other dalliances with other prominent women. Early in their marriage, he was connected to a favorite, very famous prima ballerina. I'm not sure if it was Maria Alonso. It wasn't Margot Fontaine.
But it was somebody up there.
Somebody big in the ballet world, and that irked Elizabeth. This was early in her, I think, just after she was coronated.
And it's hard to compete with those dancers and those ballerinas. Yes. I mean, they have the beautiful figures and the grace and everything like that.
Right.
She must have hated that.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't bad looking when she was young.
Yeah.
She was okay, but
she was a princess. She was a princess.
Yes.
It's like you can't beat that.
No, you can't. No. And your father's the king? No, you can't. But he was also linked to other women within his navy circles. If you watch The Crown or season one, she suspected him of having a thing going on with the wife of one of his navy buddies. And she actually, I don't know how true this is, she in The Crown, she paid a visit to this woman, I think. Maybe it wasn't that woman, but she was the wife of his buddy, and she wanted information, you know, what was Philip doing after hours with her husband, with this woman's husband. I don't think it was with the woman herself, but he was, you know, carrying on like he was a bachelor, even though he was a newly married man. And there were reports of his flirtation. So he, you know, he had a reputation for that, and he also had a reputation for saying things that he shouldn't say, that he should have kept to himself. He had a loose tongue, and some of these things were today would be considered racially insensitive.
Wow!
But all in all, he was a man who upheld the duty of the royal personage. And he stood behind the queen, and he was very vociferous in demanding that Charles marry Diana and not string her along. Those were his words. You know, what are you going to do? You're 30 years old, or 33 years old. You're going to string this one along for another, whatever. You know, he was a very blunt person, and he didn't always get along very well with his children. I think he and Charles clashed. He sent Charles to his boarding school in Scotland, a very austere institution, and Charles hated it. He wasn't cut out for those things. And Philip wanted to make a man out of him, you know, some sensibility, some responsibility in his pants. But it was a terrible experience, and Charles had to go somewhere. I'm not sure if he completed all 4 years in this. It's an equivalent of a high school, a preparatory school. It was a very, very strict, Spartan educational institution, and didn't work out for Charles, who vowed never to send his own children there. He never sent his own sons there. He sent them to Eton or, the other famous sort of British academy where the upper classes mingle. You know, I think I'm not sure if Churchill went there, but all the bigwigs, even some prime ministers of recent memory have been graduates of that.
John Major, I think, right? John.
Yes, I think so, yes. Possibly. I'm not sure if it was John Major.
Tony Blair.
Or Tony Blair. I thought that John Major came from humble circumstances.
Right, yeah, I think he was, but Tony Blair wasn't. I think he was an aristocrat, right?
You think he went there, too.
Yeah.
I know Margaret Thatcher was the daughter of a grocer.
Yeah.
So she worked her way up into the university, and for a woman in those days, that was considered almost unheard of. And she was, an upwardly mobile person. But she wasn't born with a silver spoon in her mouth either. She was decidedly middle class, working class. But
I had a lot of respect for Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, her. No, she was one of a kind. I mean, she was a tough lady. But she also believed that women had, you know, they had traditional roles to play in the house and in the household. And she cooked. She didn't abandon her domestic skills at all. She didn't, according to the Crown, she was dressed, always dressed very properly, and she cooked. She cooked for her ministers. I mean, she was, she was a career woman ahead of her time. But nevertheless, she was a standard bearer of what women's roles in their marriages and their household should be. She didn't abandon that. You know, she believed in hard work. She came from that culture. But
a bridge. Cut you off, but let me remind folks, Melissa Itell Jorn is the voice you're hearing. Frank McKay here, urging everyone to go to melissaiteljorn.com. She was very much a bridge from the old school to New School. I always thought of her as being that. And, you know, she's not June Cleaver, but she wasn't, you know, Mary Tyler. You know, she was like a mixture, you know. She was she was somebody who went to work and worked very hard at it, but at the same time had some traditional values. Yes. Very interesting lady. The Iron Lady, yes. They call her, right? The Iron Lady.
Yes. Yeah. And I think the Crown's portrayal of her in the latest season, I loved it. I think that Gillian Anderson was fabulous as Margaret Thatcher. She had her down to a T, from her speech to her mannerisms, and that was Margaret Thatcher. She was playing Margaret Thatcher. She brought Margaret Thatcher to life. I know Meryl Streep also played Margaret Thatcher in the movies, also an impeccable portrayal. But that was Margaret Thatcher. I mean, a traditional woman who... a brilliant woman who rose up in the ranks, but she, you know, she maintained her propriety. You know, some people would say, oh, she was so bourgeois or middle class, but she looked, you know, she was a class act from the way she dressed, and I admire that. I think more and more people should dress like that. But we're in a society where I think the dress code has gone out the door, and especially in this country. Maybe not so much in Britain. I'm not sure about them, but definitely in this country, I think dress codes are finished. People don't go to the theater dressed up in their Sunday best. They wear, I don't know what. I've seen people wear what I thought they were going to wear to go to put out the garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, we started out talking, and we'll remind everyone that Prince Philip has just passed at the age of 99. And, just a very... a very interesting life. And a couple of the things you say in there, you know, really provoke thought and get you thinking. You know, he was, very much his own guy when he came in, and then he had to take a role as someone who's holding his wife's coat. See, I could do that, you know, like even when my wife has events in there and she's running the show somewhere, I will, I will always run around. I'll be an errand boy, so to speak, you know, and I don't have any problem with that at all. That's her
nice
moment.
Was
that?
Yeah. I mean, that's great. You're very supportive. I mean, have you gone to public events with her, you know?
100%, yeah. And I run around. I just run, and I have I volunteer, and I'm the errand boy. Anybody needs anything, I'll run and I'll get it. Yeah. You know, like something that she wouldn't send an employee to, or somebody like an underling, for lack of a better term. If they're doing something else, I'll say, well, I'll run and get that. You know, and especially driving moving around,
right.
Well, and, you know, make sure.
You're good. You're very good natured.
Yeah, well, he was. He did that. Well, he certainly didn't run around. He didn't run and get the balloon.
No.
Balloons
no,
for some event.
He didn't go and get the horses.
Yeah.
He did ride beside her. He was a big, very, very expert horseman. They both rode horses for the various ceremonies. He appeared at, you know, the troping of the color and at all the most of the functions, of course, until he retired. About 4 years ago, he retired, and then he's been hit with various maladies through the years. He has appeared with her except for those times. He made it to the wedding of his grandson Harry, despite having had hip surgery. He was there. He walked pretty well. He didn't miss that for the world. I don't know. We wonder what their personal feelings were about their welcoming their son, their grandson's wife, but.
Yeah, that's an interesting situation.
It's going to be. I don't know when this funeral is. I imagine it will be a very elaborately planned, precise funeral, state funeral with who knows what. With they'll probably close down Britain for a couple of days or something.
Yeah.
And Harry will have to come back with his wife, and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know. How are they going to face this now? Look at the rumpus they caused, or she caused. I think she preyed on his you know, she probably said to him, "What are you doing? You don't want to do this. Don't let these people push you around. Let's go. Let's leave the country."
Yeah. Let's leave the royal family.
Let's leave them and look at how much money we can make.
Yeah. You know?
Let's go back to my neck of the woods. You'll love it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the jet set crowd. Oh, Oprah will be our neighbor. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's say, yeah, we wonder what that, boy, that's going to be a strange. Strange feeling in the funeral. They're going to be sitting, I assume, with the Queen, right? I mean, they're not going to be separate.
She might be separate. They'll definitely be sitting with his brother William and his wife. And I'm sure there is a lot of to be said that they would love to say to each other. And I'm sure the you could cut the air with the animosity.
Yeah,
it's not just William. I hear it's the whole most of the country is just peeved at them.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, just absolutely amazing. The royal family is something that's fascinating to so many people. I think I told you that I've had on my show Omid Scobie, and he travels with Harry and Meghan, very close to them, and he's very close to the royal family in general. And in some sense. And, you know, he's a reporter for, you know, there's Good Morning America and all these different, and he reports always on the royal family. I have him coming up, but I haven't spoken to him since this whole situation has happened. And, you know, it would be great to talk to him now. Reach out to him now and just see if he has a couple words to say about this. But I imagine this is major news. But it's going to be major news when the funeral procession is there, and you know they're big into protocol, and I don't even think Meghan will have this. I don't think that she's gonna grandstand at something like this. What do you think?
She's not gonna grandstand, but she'll have to come, and she's gonna have to deal with the glaring press and with. Oh, what people!
Throwing daggers at her.
Yeah, right. I mean, you would go insane thinking about what everybody's going to say about you, or might say. She might, she'll have to come and face all these people she spoke badly about, namely her sister-in-law Kate, and her brother-in-law, who I read, he's got something to tell. He's just he's biting his tongue from telling what he feels is the real side of the story, his side of the story. And of course, various other members of the royal family. Of course, Meghan does have her supporters as much as she has her detractors. But this is going to be something else. I really wonder if these two thought about it. You know, his ailing grandfather,
an elderly queen.
Yes, and what? How are you going to face these people? How are you going to face this all down? You know, it's just it's unbelievable. If this doesn't show Harry as being a weak-minded, henpecked guy, I don't know what will.
Yeah, I wonder if he'll wear his Hitler costume to the funeral.
Yeah, right.
What the hell was he thinking? Right? Remember, didn't he go to a Halloween party in Hitler?
Was it a Halloween party? I thought it was in Britain, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was something. I thought it was just a costume party, and he was drinking away, and he thought he would look cool, and it was a Nazi uniform.
Jeez.
You know, very in very poor taste.
Wow. What the heck was he thinking? And by the way, he was a soldier himself, and I think he actually fought, right? I mean, he was, or he actually served. It wasn't just ceremonial. I think he actually, I don't know if he saw action. I don't know where they would have seen action, the Gulf or somewhere, the second Gulf. I don't know. But didn't Harry join the military?
He did, yes, I think. And his brother flew a helicopter. Well, Harry went to Afghanistan. Now, of course, he didn't. I don't know how much real action he could have seen because they would have had to keep him out of harm's way. But he was, he was there. And it's funny, the reality of William and Harry's lives, the trajectory of their lives, parallels the Queen's and her sisters, her late sisters' lives and their actions, their courses of action. You know, the Queen was this dutiful woman and I guess very not a risk taker, and her sister who would never get a prominent role, except as a second-tier player, was not allowed to marry the man she loved, and she had a lot of heartache and disappointment, all in the name of you know, duty, honor, country. That's actually what Douglas MacArthur said, but I'm just paraphrasing it in general. And I think the Queen even saw that Harry was very similar to her late sister, and that, you know, he wasn't going to probably he'll never be king, you know, never ascend the throne. His life, he was a spare. He was the supporting player. And, you know, he lost his mother when he was very young, so he had a lot, you know, a very tragic upbringing. And you know, I mean, she may have felt sympathetic toward him, and they allowed him to marry this, you know, this I call her a character, but...
Yeah.
You know, normally, and this is something that actually someone close to the British royal circle has said. This is what Lady Colin Campbell has said, and she's written a few books about the royal family, and she knew Princess Diana pretty well, that, you know, they just let it go. They figured, well, you know, let's use her ethnic background. You know, they allowed her to marry him because of her ethnic background. I mean, this was to them, this was showing that they were, you know, they were turning a new page in British history by allowing him to marry, you know, someone he wanted who did not fit the stereotypical, you know, white, you know, Anglo-Saxon, whatever. And I think the Queen kind of felt she had a soft spot for him because she saw her late sister, and he reminded her of her.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, the whole thing. One of the things, and again, MelissaIteljorn.com, great place to go and binge listen to everything that we're doing here. Odyssey is the new spot for radio.com. If you listen on radio.com, I guess you know by now that it is now Odyssey. And you know, if you're not happy there, you can go to any number of over 100 outlets to listen to us. But binge listen to everything that we've done together here. Melissa Iteljorn, with me here, Frank McKay. Let me ask you something before we maybe touch on the tax situation a bit and the budget and you know, something we talked about off mic. But you touched on something interesting with Prince Philip about wanting, you know, to make sure that his son and, you know, the future king had some substance to him or whatever. And maybe he was like a little harder on him. It brings up a complicated situation. I mean, for the most part, people scoff at the royals, you know, like, oh, well, look, they have nothing to worry about. They have nothing. No, they have a different set of problems to worry about. And it's all very public. And I think Prince Philip understood that that he wanted his children to be as, they're never going to be normal, of course, but Prince Philip wanted his children to at least be, you know, men. You know, he didn't want them to be, I don't know what the word, just spoiled, rotten, whatever. It's a very hard thing to do as a royal. How do you think he did as a father? Just kind of in closing on Prince Philip.
As a father?
Yeah.
He was known to be a very...
diligent, right?
Very, a very frosty man. I mean, he wasn't one to give in to emotion.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure he had his favorites, but he was very hard on Charles.
Right.
And oddly enough, though, Charles had a difficult childhood because he just didn't fit in, and he, you know, Philip didn't think he was tough enough. He didn't think he was acting manly enough. He was just he was a sissy. That's what he thought he was.
Yeah.
Charles was the one who visited him at the hospital, who looked in on him. I mean, Charles is, you know, I guess he's the
sensitive type.
The what? I'm sorry.
He's the sensitive type in a sense, Charles.
Yeah. Well, he's been mocked because of his ears, because, you know, Prince Philip was a gorgeous man. If you looked at the pictures of him taken 75 years ago, you know, in his youth, he was a gorgeous man.
And Charles didn't take after him.
Didn't quite add up to that. You know, and Charles didn't fit the persona that Philip wanted him to be. Wanted him to be, you know, this be like him, you know, tough as nails. Despite their, you know, their clashes, and perhaps, yes, Charles feeling, you know, feeling inferior at times, you know, having to deal with a bruised ego. He was the one who went to the hospital to check on his father many times. And now he's really leading he's taking over in a lot of aspects of the royal family that the Queen has bequeathed to him. You know, she's let him take over many of the ceremonial aspects. I mean, let's face it, he's been training for this job for over 50 years.
Yep. Yeah, no question. It's certainly a interesting thing. Well, to change the subject and to go way across the pond, yes. You know, here in New York, we have budgets and reforms and all kinds of things, and certainly federally. Have you been paying attention to all our fiscal goings on with the country and with the state?
Yeah, well, you know, Governor Cuomo, who's knee-deep in allegations and scandals.
Even more than allegations now, and they're getting heavier.
Yes, that's true. I mean, it should be about the nursing home for the
accident. No doubt.
And death study. I mean, that should be the primary focus. Yeah, the women coming out, I mean, the man is just a pig. But
no doubt.
They should really get him on the nursing home scandals. Because, you know, if this had been a Republican governor, he would have been, you know, dead and buried by now.
Yeah, Pataki, he would have been dead.
Yes, yes, no doubt. But the beloved New York State Assembly, one of the worst state governments in the country,
right.
They, with the governor's approval, have passed the massive tax increase, which to go after the upper echelons of the tax bracket, that for what they claim is, you know. I don't know, all kinds of programs to help non-citizen workers, alien workers, they're going after. They're in effect, we're already taxed to the hilt. They're taxing even more. And if you're saying out there, oh, it won't affect me. Yeah, it will affect you eventually. It will, and it will trickle down and affect you, because the state and especially the city are in shambles. And to start attacking everywhere, that's not going to do the city and the state any good. I mean, we're going to go down. I mean, just down the toilet at this point, as you see more and more people moving away, and the city especially becoming unlivable. And if what happens if corporations abandon New York City and taxes are so unbearable that people flee? I mean, what is the state going to become?
Yeah.
So, and why is Cuomo behind this? I mean, this is obviously a left-hand, a ploy of the leftists. Why is he doing this? He was supposed to be Mr. Centrist, Mr. Common Sense Democrat. He was supposed to be following in the footsteps of his father.
He's trying to curry favor with those who won't impeach him. Is basically it, and the left is controlling things, and he's saying, well, are you going to be there for me when I need you, or are you going to keep attacking me or whatever? And they'll be like, well, we need this, you know, we need to go after the rich, and we need to, you know, I worry about this state. I wonder if this state is going to be livable when our children get older. It's the taxes are unbearable, especially on Long Island. You go upstate New York, it's you know, it's better, but Long Island taxes, starting with school taxes and everything else, almost unbearable.
I know, it's just unbelievable. I don't know what's going to be in the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, I guess they hope the sports betting and marijuana will bail out and pay for all of that. But I'll tell you, those are two new reforms, and nothing like a good scandal to get things passed that have been dawdling for years. I mean, I don't think it's any coincidence that this marijuana bill passed now, and that Andrew Cuomo's taken vows on it, and and also the sports betting. You know, he wants to get attention off of everything else. You know, the nursing home, and again, nursing home is buried, and that's the real. I mean, that's where people died. That's where people, the real cover ups were. And yes, the horrible about the you know, the Me Too movement is rearing its head. And is all over Cuomo, as he sounds like he was all over everyone, and just terrible behavior by Andrew Cuomo. But you're right. Hopefully, it doesn't take attention off of the nursing home situation.
I agree. I hope so, but I fear it will.
Well, what is the latest? I mean, he's, you know, we got a couple of moments here, right? But he's. Just, you know, they got through the budgetary stuff, right, and everything's mm-hmm. kind of here, and he's passing these bills. He's obviously cut deals with the left. We don't dispute that, right? There's no hiding that.
Yeah, I guess not. I just feel that this is so I don't know how to put it. I don't know what Cuomo was thinking. I guess he was thinking, let me side with the left, so I have a softer blow on the way, you know, a softer fall on the way down.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, do these people realize what they're doing? I mean, do they realize that they're delivering? They're practically, you know, opening the door. They're putting the sacrificial lamb on the pyre for the, you know, for the left.
Yeah, and they're chasing people out of state, and I don't know what the, you know, what the population change here is, but I know that if you look in South Carolina and you look in North Carolina and Florida, that you're seeing New Yorkers retire down there because they can't retire up here, and part of that. I mean, big part of that started happening even before the left turned, and now the left is in complete control of Albany, and you know what that means? That means tax anybody that, and again, we're not talking about the billionaires being taxed here. We're talking about normal people being taxed to death, and it's going to pay for programs that the left and the city Democrats are in favor of. I mean, you know, Long Island and upstate New York are getting hosed on all of this. So, I don't know. It's not a happy set of days for New York State residents. I don't know that too many people are very happy.
I don't think so. It's just, you know, everybody can't move. Those who are going to be left are going to have to deal with this, with the brunt of it. I don't know. It's, you know, and this is not the only place where it's happening. That the left is trying to make their to get their claws on the system, not just locally, not just on the state level, but on the federal level too. And to some people, it looks this is quite alarming that they're trying to change the system of government, and perhaps, you know, bend the Constitution, if you will.
Yeah. It's happening, and now maybe the time that we're seeing the payment to the left that President Biden owes for his election and his doing away with Bernie Sanders as a serious candidate. He kind of blew through him and the establishment, quote unquote, and that means the Obamas and the Clintons and all the middle of the road folks. So-called middle of the road folks, I did away with the Bernie, the very popular Bernie Sanders, and the socialist end. But they didn't get rid of him completely. They just got him out of the presidential seat. Now it's payback time, and you're seeing that happen, or is that my imagination?
I think you're seeing that, yeah. And maybe, you know, Cuomo thinking he's ahead of the game. He thinks this is a smart move for him. You know, but. You know, this is with him and de Blasio and don't get me started on Biden and what I think is going on behind the scenes. I mean, Joe Manchin is trying to hold the fort down, you know. He doesn't want to give in on the filibuster and on guns.
Because, big player, you know, now, Joe Manchin.
Yeah.
Major
player.
He is.
Good. I'm very glad to see that because he is in an increasingly red state.
Yeah.
It's a blue state becoming red, And he's the holdout in the traditional form of the Democratic Party. He and Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona are the two who are the bulwarks against, you know, this progressive trend.
Yeah, no, he's a player, and he's positioning himself. He's going to be an interesting watch for the next couple of years, at least the next couple of years. He is going to be a fascinating story. I think each and every vote that comes down, he's the decider. He's the deciding vote, and boy, I'd love to be his constituent. He's going to bring home the bacon. They've got no choice. He's going to bring home the bacon, and if he doesn't, he's going to be bringing his vote elsewhere. He's in a very strong political position.
Yes.
Well,
definitely.
Well, give us a final word on Prince Philip. And again, I think we'll be talking about it again. The funeral's coming up, and there's very little chance of there being no drama at that funeral. I think there's going to be drama, no matter whoever looks at anybody the wrong way, or glances the wrong, or doesn't shake anybody's hand. I think they're going to be careful not to do anything like that. I think the obvious things are going to be there. But last thought on Philip.
Well, Philip was a long-serving prince consort, spouse who was supportive of the queen, of the royal family. He was a very sharp guy, very sharp-witted guy, sharp-tongued. And he had his sponsorships. He served on hundreds of charitable committees. He tried to change life in Britain. He was interested in societal issues. I think he was his daughter inherited his sharp tongue, his wit, his sharp tongue, and his, as he was, if you watch The Crown, and of course, The Crown is not 100% accurate.
No, it's entertainment.
It's entertainment, but I think the portrayal of him, of Philip and his daughter, are quite accurate because they seem to have the same personality traits. But I think it's, he was a man of his time. And a formidable one at that, and we'll see how the queen carries on after that. I suspect she will. It's probably after 73 years, it is a loss. I mean, it's like more than a lifetime together, and she's always been one for duty. She will never abdicate, and she's a little younger. She's going to be 95 this month, I believe.
Oh. I'm going to see if she starts becoming available on the dating scene. Will be interesting.
Yes, we'll see if she's going to be at if she'll go on The Bachelorette. I don't know. I mean, I think right now she's in pretty good health.
Yeah, I think so. Long live the queen. Yeah. Long live the queen, and rest in peace, Prince Philip.
Yes, absolutely. And well, the state funeral will be quite something to behold, in its pageantry and its orchestration, and of course in the lineup of guests. I know. I mean, Harry and Meghan are going to keep their mouths shut, but people are going to, they're going to look, and you can only imagine what will be running through their minds when they see them.
Yeah. Well, we'll be watching. Melissa, thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you.
And to everybody out there, thank you very much for listening each and every week.
Yes.
And
really appreciate it.
No doubt about it. And go to MelissaIteljorn.com. Watch the documentaries. And also binge listen to everything that we've been doing here. And again, Odyssey instead of radio.com. And I'm sure you all know that by now, but go to iHeartRadio.com, go to radio.net, go to radiouk.net, Spotify, anywhere. They have great podcasts and radio shows. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you next time on the Melissa Itell-Jorn Show.
You've been listening to Melissa Itell-Duran and co-host Frank McKay on Breaking It Down Radio.